Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
Have you ever noticed that humans tend to like labels? We like stereotypes. We like names. In Western society, as soon as we introduce ourselves, we begin with our name. I told you my name is Adam Marshall. That's what's on my driver's license, my birth certificate, my social security card, other forms of ID. I told you that I was a declared candidate for ministry, something that describes my current path, my current career progression. I also am called a techie. I like computers and technology and stuff. If you got an email from me at work, my day job where I get my paycheck, my email signature would say IT Project Coordinator, which basically means I manage emails. You might also know me as a musician. I play the piano, I play the harp, I do a lot of other stuff. All of these labels, all of these categories describe who I am, but none of them can encapsulate everything that I am as a person. And I think the same can be said for all of us. I don't think that that's a bad thing per se. I was listening to NPR one time and they were describing some of this necessity, the survival instinct, and that early humans would have benefited from having categories of good and bad. This berry is good. That berry is liable to kill you. You can go after a ram or a sheep and you'll be totally fine, but you better have backup if you go after a saber-toothed tiger. I want to submit to you, though, that even though labels are not bad, even though stereotypes and categories aren't bad, that sometimes they can be unnecessarily limiting, that sometimes they give us the wrong impression or somehow carry an unhelpful preconception. For example, even though I'm gay, I cannot arrange flowers. My name is not Luis Perez. You might consider yourself a car nerd. You might be a gearhead, but that doesn't mean you know how to change the oil in a brand new Tesla, which I don't think has oil. You might think of a bad guy, but bad guys aren't always bad guys. Has anybody ever seen Despicable Me or Hotel Transylvania, Maleficent, Wreck-It Ralph? Yeah, I watch those movies. I'd like for us this morning to set aside some of the baggage that we might have with some preconceived notions and explore some new possibilities. As we come to our text this morning, I'd like to go over a little bit of context. According to the biblical narrative in the history of preceding the Exodus, there was a terrible 7-year famine throughout the Middle East that was preceded by 7 years of plenty. Egypt was adequately prepared for this disaster because the current pharaoh, under the advisement of Joseph, had prepared wisely. Joseph's family finds plenty of food and sustenance in the land of Egypt, not to mention a blood relative in a considerable position of power. Whether their move was out of convenience, survival, or divine guidance, their entire family, wives, children, patriarch, and material goods, all gets up and relocates to Egypt. By the time Moses enters the picture, that family had been in Egypt some 400 years and had grown into the Hebrew people, the Israelite nation. Let's give that just a little bit of perspective. 400 years ago from today, William Shakespeare was all the rage, and the colonies were just getting started on the eastern seaboard. 400 years is a lot of time to pass, a lot of opportunity for culture and traditions to gradually change and morph. The God of their fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, may have been pigeonholed into legend, altogether forgotten or associated with some other Egyptian deity. Moses was raised by Pharaoh's daughter, which means he likely grew up in a position of power with some privilege. We don't know how much he knew about his ancestry or even how much interaction he had with his birth family. I'm inclined to think it wasn't a whole lot. So Moses flees to the land of Midian after killing an Egyptian for beating a Hebrew. While in Midian, he married Zipporah, the daughter of Jethro, the high priest of Midian. It's interesting that in the scripture passage and in the story of Exodus, nothing negative is ever said about the land of Midian or the Midianites, just that Jethro was their high priest. We pick up the story at the beginning of Exodus chapter 3. Moses was taking care of the flock for his father-in-law Jethro, Midian's priest. He led his flock out to the edge of the desert, and he came to God's mountain called Horeb. The Lord's messenger appeared to him in a flame of fire in the middle of a bush. Moses saw that the bush was in flames, but that it didn't burn up. Then Moses said to himself, "Let me check out this amazing sight and find out why the bush isn't burning up." When the Lord saw that he was coming to look, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." Moses said, "I'm here." Then the Lord said, "Don't come any closer. Take off your sandals, because you are standing on holy ground." He continued, "I am the God of your father, Abraham's God, Isaac's God, and Jacob's God." Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. God continued to speak to Moses, verse 10, and said, "So get going. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I to go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" God said, "I'll be with you, and this will show you that I'm the one who sent you. After you bring the people out of Egypt, you will come back here and worship God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I now come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' they're going to ask me, 'What's this God's name?' What am I supposed to say to them?" I think this is a pretty fair question that Moses is asking, especially when you consider that the Egyptians had some 118 different gods. I couldn't name and spell 118 people on my Facebook friends list. Was he being addressed by Ra, the sun god? Was this Seth, the god of the desert? Or maybe Maat, the goddess of truth and justice? Verse 14. God said to Moses, "I am who I am. So say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" This passage has always spoken to me in ways that I cannot fully comprehend. God is claiming the name I am, words that seem to describe very existence itself. I've thought about this name for God quite often. I've had a lot of discussions with friends in college, those friends who also enjoyed the Back to the Future series and other science fiction types. As young fundamentalists, this was about as close as we got to Christian mysticism, and I really loved it. But I wonder if, for the majority of Christians, if we just skip over this name for God from being a wondrous mystery to just being another one of the labels that God gets. El Shaddai, Jehovah Jireh, El Olam, Alpha and Omega, Jehovah Nissi, the list goes on and on and on. As I was studying for this sermon, I came across something very interesting. Many Jewish scholars believe that Haya, which is the Jewish word for I am, is the first person form of the name Yahweh. Consider what I am means, or what it could mean. What if I am describes a God outside of the bounds of time itself? We're all aware of the first three dimensions, height, depth, width. I can move side to side, back and forth on this stage. We have some awareness of time because where I am now is not where I was 5 minutes ago or 2 weeks ago. As humans, though, we only perceive time in a singular direction. Theoretically, it should be possible to move back and forth. through time as a separate dimension. But consider if God exists at no one point in time, or if God exists at all points at the same time. Both the writer of Psalms and 2 Peter seem to imply that God transcends time. 2 Peter 3 reads, "Don't let it escape your notice, dear friends, that with the Lord, a single day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years are like a single day. The Lord isn't slow to keep his promise, as some think of slowness, but is patient toward you." Scientists say that time isn't even really like a straight line, the way that humans are inclined to think about it. It's more closely related to space. If you think of a series of identical fish bowls, just all in a row and all kind of like overlapping, the only difference is there's one goldfish, and the goldfish is at a slightly different position in each fishbowl as it swims across. The latest scientific theories even speculate that there are dimensions above time. String theorists concluded that there are no fewer than 10. All of this is pure conjecture, and I mention it only for us to see how big the universe is, how small we are, and how great God could be. A fifth dimension is believed to possibly be made up of an infinite number of universes just like ours, only slightly different, parallel dimensions. A sixth dimension could be the multiverse, all possible universes with the same start condition, the Big Bang. A seventh dimension could be all possible start conditions for all universes that share the same laws of physics that we have. And past that, my brain gets fuzzy. Different laws of physics and all sorts of other stuff that really doesn't make sense. But if we think about God existing in any one of these other dimensions, how else would the divine identify itself but I am? And this is but one way to think about the nature of God. Our tradition describes God in languages like infinite, eternal, and unbounded. Isaiah 55:9 records this as a message from God. "Just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my plans than your plans." With each century, humans learn something new that we used to have wrong. Humans used to think the earth was flat. We used to think that the sun revolved around the earth. We used to think that heaven existed up there in the clouds. Scientists are still even discovering additional planets past the orbit of Neptune, as most recently as January and February of this year. In some ways, it's easy to think about God in astronomical and cosmic ways, but I think we can also find God in the infinitesimal. Physics and quantum physics have always fascinated me. The more that I read about experiments and outcomes, the more we realize how much we don't know and how much we don't understand, especially at the subatomic level. There's a phenomenon known as wave-particle duality, also known as the double-slit experiment. I've lifted a few clips that I would like to narrate for you, but if you'd like, you can watch the entire video on YouTube under Easy Quantum Mechanics. So scientists have begun by throwing marbles through a slit, and then they measure where those marbles strike an opposing wall. One slit, one bar. Makes sense. Two slits, they also get two bars. Similarly to the marbles, though, when they measure this function with waves, they note that the bar or the strike on the opposing wall reaches its highest intensity in the middle. That's the place where the wave is at the top, where it is the strongest. When they perform the experiment with waves with two slits, they find that the waves interact with each other, such that where each wave converges with another one, it creates a strong or slightly less strong wave top, a new point of intensity. It changes, though, when scientists try this with electrons, tiny, tiny bits of matter. If they throw the electrons through a single slit, they get one bar on the opposing wall. If they throw the electrons through two slits, they get something completely different. When they throw the electrons through two slits, they discover a wave dispersion pattern. It's as though... So they try to discover, okay, which slit did the electron go through? They add sensors or cameras right beside to say, okay, where did the electron go through so that we can figure out how this wave dispersion pattern is coming up? And the electron says, okay, nope, I'm a little marble. I'm going to give you two bars. So when scientists perform this experiment with no cameras, they get one result. When they do the experiment with a camera, they get a totally different result. The best explanation that scientists can come up with is that the electrons are functioning as both particles and waves, and that when they function as waves, they interact with each other to reveal a dispersion pattern. This doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's infinitely repeatable. The only thing that we can do is accept it as true and ponder what it might mean. But let's discuss something else about the subatomic. Einstein's theory of general relativity was leaps and bounds above anything else that had been speculated up till that point. It is still unmatched in accuracy and precision in predicting outcomes that scientists have been observing for decades. Einstein's theory illustrates gravity as a bending of time and space. So if you took a bed sheet and you stretched it, stick a basketball in the middle, and boop, you get a bend. Scientists have furthermore determined that gravity has some correlation to mass, but science is still trying to determine what gives anything mass. It's fascinating. Until the 1900s, atoms were thought to be the most basic particle in the universe. Then scientists found out, no, atoms are made up of a nucleus and electrons that revolve around it. Later, they discovered photons. And then in 1980, they discovered that these were further broken down into fermions, quarks, leptons, gauge bosons. At which point they said, okay, this is going to get more complicated the more advanced we go along. We're going to call this all the standard model and move on. All of these scientific discoveries led to finding the Higgs field. Scientists can measure the Higgs field and observe changes to it, but they can only speculate that there's one more fermion, the Higgs boson, that is interacting with the Higgs field that gives objects mass. The problem is they haven't found it yet. You may have heard of the Large Hadron Super Collider over in Europe. It was built in an attempt to find evidence of the Higgs boson. The Nobel Prize-winning physicist Leon Lederman wrote a book in 1993 giving a brief history of particle physics. This book coined a very specific name in popular science. Quote, "This boson is so central to the state of physics today, so crucial to our final understanding of the structure of matter, yet so elusive, that I have given it a nickname, the God particle." And that's not an official name, of course, but I can't help but think that it betrays something fundamental to the human experience, the not knowing. The fact that the universe is both bigger and smaller than we can even imagine. The conviction that there is something out there that is infinitely greater and beyond ourselves, and yet somehow we can almost reach it. How can anyone describe such an existence like that? Maybe God did by simply saying, "I am." I have one final thought about the nature of God, and it's from a video game. Final Fantasy VII is very popular in nerd culture, And it's a story about this planet that has a corporation called Shinra. They are trying to mine their planet's resources. They call it Mako. They refine it into materia. But what they don't realize is that this energy that they are drawing from the planet is the same energy that keeps people alive. There are plants and animals, humans and other creatures. All of these beings draw from this energy. The energy swirls. It sometimes is depicted as a green mist. When children are born in this mythos, it is said that they are blessed with the gift of life. When people die, it is said that they return, their souls, their energy, their spirit returns to this energy. This energy is called the life stream. I can't help but wonder if maybe we could see God as our life stream. There's a long-standing concept in the Judeo-Christian tradition that God is this massive, faceless, radiant figure sitting on a throne in the clouds. I don't think that's bad or that that's wrong, but I have to confess that that never impressed me. It never drove me to change. It never inspired me to action or led me to a transformative understanding about God. I think we have some latitude in how we conceptualize, how we encounter, and even how we experience God. Maybe we see God as a person in the heavenly realm, but is God limited to personhood the way that we are limited to personhood? Maybe we see God as a burning bush, but could God possibly be contained by any physical manifestation, regardless of physical impossibility? Maybe we see God in the mysteries of our observable universe, but could God's hope, his love, or peace ever be explained by particles and fermions? As Christians, we believe that all good things come from God, including life itself. What if God and life are more connected than our notions of God would allow us to think? How would we live? How would we behave? Would we change our opinions and our habits? We recognize God is unlimited and infinite. As Isaiah testified, God's thoughts and ways are higher than humankind can even comprehend. The very language that we use for God is limited because humans are limited. If we know God to be love, how can we do anything else than to be a people who reflect God's love? Friends, may we forever live into the fullness of the source of all being, the transcendent of time and space, the life stream, the I am. Amen. Immortal, invisible, divine wisdom, we come to you with our petitions, our relations, our insecurities, and our broken hearts. Recognizing where we fall short, we rejoice that you can take anything and make it beautiful. We thank you for your love and grace. We lift up any prayers that may not have been spoken or shared among us. We ask for your healing, for your peace, and for your presence in all of our lives. We ask all these things in the name of the one who taught us to pray, saying, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.